Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Educated as a scientist, Barbara Ehrenreich is an award-winning and best-selling author, journalist, activist, and advocate for social justice. In her new book, Living with a Wild God, her first memoir, she recounts her quest, beginning in childhood, to find the truth about the universe and everything else. What's really going on? Why are we here? And the book tackles the big questions that we all face in the most personal way possible. It is a great pleasure to welcome Barbara Ehrenreich back to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you here.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be with you, too.
Give us a sense of at what point you thought, I'd like to write about myself, I'd like to write a memoir.
Well, I actually had in mind originally to write a history of religion. Pretty ambitious project, but I had some ideas and wanted to do that. And a lot of what my research for that informs this book in ways that you probably wouldn't notice, because the book turned out to be a narrative. I decided to build my story around my own experiences and put these sort of theory parts into what is a narrative, an action-packed narrative, I dare say, of my early years up to about the age of 30.
You certainly write an awful lot about your adolescence and childhood. You speak very frankly about your family. Is that difficult to reveal, or does it just give a context, do you think?
Well, I didn't intend to be revealing any great secrets. This is not a story of abuse, or, well, there's some things that I would call abuse now as a modern parent and grandparent, but we're not at the time. My parents married too young. They had me too young. They were originally quite poor. There was a lot of drinking in the family.
Right. And it was not a religious family.
No. No. And that was one of, I think, something I'm very grateful for. My parents, you know, came from Butte, Montana, a copper mining town. My father had been a miner, as were most of the men in the family who weren't railroad workers. And they were very, dare I say, intellectual. They read a lot. Mm-hmm. They discussed a lot. My father was adamantly an atheist, so was my mother. And that tradition goes back a few generations earlier to an Irish Catholic, I don't know if she's great-great-grandmother or great-great-great-grandmother, who lived in western Montana in the 1880s and rejected the church completely, because when her father lay dying, and she sent for the priest to administer last rites, she got back a message saying she'd have to pay $25, a huge sum.
Absolutely.
For those people. And that was the end for my family.
You kept a journal in your adolescence, which you discovered, which I assume in some ways informs much of the book and writing about those early years.
Yes, it was something to build on. It was a primary source for my research. I couldn't have done this book wouldn't have thought of doing it if I didn't have that journal. I couldn't just publish the journal. I mean, things that you write when you're 14 are not necessarily the way you'd write them when you're a little bit older, like 50 years older. And also, I think the journal was frustratingly evasive at times. It was entirely about my philosophical adventures and my efforts to find the truth about everything. And it gets a little tangled. So I had to do a lot of deconstructing, reconstructing, to get the story out.
And yeah. And for you, the story is, because I'm curious at that age how much you were thinking, as you say, in philosophical terms, but were you thinking about religion? Were you thinking about the things that were not part of your life, of what was out there, of what was creating things?
Oh, yes, I thought a lot about religion. Most of my friends when I was a kid were Catholics or Protestants, and some of them tried to convert me. I went to services with some of them. I was not impressed or won over by their churches. But I was kind of fascinated. You know, here were people all around me who believed in something, who believed that there was a single God, a unique God who runs everything and also happens to be intensely interested in each one of us. I thought this was a fascinating delusion.
And you explore life and death and mortality. They're all very deep subjects to be considering at that age.
I don't know if they are deep subjects to be considering at that age. I think these are very common subjects for young people, adolescents especially. We're just encouraged to put them aside and mature and grow up and face, you know, important issues like how to pay our student debts and our mortgage if we have one and so on. But they never went away from me, the questions.
So with that said, are you more conscious of how your childhood shaped the path that you took as an adult?
I'm not sure. I don't really try to connect all the dots and say, this is the cause of that, and which leads to that, or anything. My life doesn't seem to proceed that way. There are sudden surprises. Now, I think that there are some things that go back to childhood. Certainly, I remain an atheist, but also a kind of social consciousness. Since my culture of origin was a blue-collar culture, you know, I was taught really to respect everybody's work, that everybody was working very, very hard to make my life and other people's lives possible. And that certainly continues with me.
Barbara Ehrenreich is our guest. The title of the new book is Living with a Wild God. Describe the wild God you were living with.
Huh. Well, first, here's a little of the history of religion part of this, that monotheism is a pretty recent innovation. It's only about 2,500 years old. And I was very impressed to learn that most religions before that, if you can even call them religions, centered on deities who were not human-shaped, who were multiple, who were female, and were often in the form of animals. My own ancestors, my Celtic ancestors, worshipped a goddess, Epona, who took the shape of a horse. She's not, you know, these gods were not good, they were not bad, they were not particularly interested in us, but these were the centers of religion. So I use God in a pretty generous ecumenical fashion here, way beyond monotheism.
And as far as the wild part, for you, there was a relationship.
Well, it's how I would describe a God who is not good, who is has its own agenda, who may not even be singular, may be plural. There a consciousness other than our own that exists in the universe, and can sometimes interact with.
You're hard in the book on both religion and science, and I'm curious as to your thoughts on how those two can and should or should not coexist.
Oh, I don't think they can be exactly reconciled. I bring a rationalist scientific perspective to things that other people would simply say are, you know, the jurisdiction of religion or mysticism. I say, no, so people have these mystical experiences, strange experiences, which I certainly did in my teenage years. I don't, you know, put that off in a separate box and say, well, that's just the mysterious, unknowable, et cetera. I say, no, I want to understand what that's about. And so the last third of the book comes into my middle years and older years, and the attempts to figure that out.
The mystical experience that you had in adolescence, as you write about, had to have been shattering, given that quest to find out what is real and what the truth is.
Well, yes, and I couldn't put it into words. I was 17 years old. I had what seemed to me to be an encounter with something alive, and I would say conscious. But I had, you know, no words for that. I had no idea what to do with that information, with that experience, and decided very rationally that it must have been a mental breakdown, and kind of put it away like that. Mm-hmm. For decades, all the time sort of secretly in my mind returning to it, and finally in later years saying, well, I think it was an encounter.
Have you ever thought that it could be recreated in a way?
I don't know. I can't. I mean, you mean like with meditation or...
Meaning that if you are open to it, and that is that if you sort of understand it more, that it could happen again.
Oh, I think it could happen again. I don't know. I have any idea of what would make it happen again. Why would you want to make it happen again, though?
Right.
I mean, it was both ecstatic and shattering. So there was that. There was an allure, but I would not go looking for something like that.
When you talk about the experience of writing the book, do you feel that going over your adolescence, reading that journal from those years, does that change you in a significant way?
Yes, I learned a lot. I forced myself to think through a lot of hard things. I did research. yeah, I felt this is something I had to do. I felt I had to do, and that I, you know, if I didn't eventually do it, you know, I'd run out of time, and I couldn't do it.
Well, the book is fascinating. It is Living with a Wild God, A Non-Believer's Search for the Truth About Everything. It is published by 12. Barbara Ehrenreich, a great pleasure. Thank you so much for spending time with
us. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, Bye. The title of the book, Living with a Wild God. Barbara Ehrenreich is the author. It's published by 12. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.